I'm Debbie Travis.
And I'm Tommy Smythe.
And this is Trust Me, I'm a Decorator.
Well, hello, Debbie Travis.
Well, hello, Tommy Smythe.
You look like you have like a hesitant look on your face. I want to tell you something before we get started. I was in your old stomping ground yesterday. Patrick and I traveled to Montreal to see the solar eclipse.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
Well, here's how it happened. We were on Sunday morning, so the eclipse was on a Monday. On the Sunday morning, Patrick said, you know, it's going to be cloudy in southern Ontario, and I really want to see this, so I think we need to go to where it's going to be sunny. So he figured out that Montreal was in the path of totality, so where you could see the full effect of the solar eclipse. And the forecast was perfect in terms of blue skies and sunshine and no clouds. So we talked a little bit about the ways in which you can get from Toronto to Montreal. And what I have always found so interesting is that basically it's a 5-hour journey, whether you fly or whether you drive or whether you take the train. It's more or less the same thing, because by the time you get from your house to the airport, to the airplane, to the airport, to the other hotel, like, so in my view, the least stressful way to get there is to go on Via Rail. So we booked Via Rail tickets. And then here's my second favorite thing is when you get to Montreal on Via Rail, the Fairmont Hotel is up the escalator. It is literally built on top of the train station. So if you're looking for convenience.
And that's the famous hotel where they did the John Lennon sleep in. Right?
John and Yoko did their bed in that hotel. So it's a mid-century modern hotel. And so we had the most delightful experience. And Patrick planned all of this for us. So thank you, Patrick. It was just couldn't have been better. We got in a very short Uber to Union Station in Toronto, got on the train. We watched movies. We caught up on emails. There was full Wi-Fi. We went business class is only like a $45 upgrade or something crazy. And so we had a lovely meal. We had free flowing drinks. Like it was just couldn't have been more pleasurable. Versus being in a car and being stressed out by other drivers. And, you know, it's an ugly car drive. It's not pretty. Yeah. So it was just amazing. And then we went upstairs to our beautiful room in the Fairmont. We got organized. We had a nice dinner in Montreal at one of my favorite places, Sushi Momo. And we had the perfect eclipse. And then we got home last night at about, I guess, almost 1 a.m. But it couldn't have been better.
So where did you watch the eclipse?
We watched it in Parc La Fontaine.
Okay.
So Patrick wanted to be, this was a great sort of thing that he did, was he organized this so that we could be among people, because it's such an interesting collective, you know, to experience collective awe in the world is just such a rare thing to be able to do. And so we definitely knew that we wanted to be around other people, but he also wanted to be somewhere fairly natural, like where there were trees and grass and where there were animals and things like that. So the park was really perfect. It's in a beautiful neighborhood in Montreal. It has beautiful restaurants around it. So we got a little picnic, pizza picnic, and brought it into the park and had this beautiful, moving collective experience for the eclipse. And then we hopped on the train and went back home, and it was just easy as could be.
Wow. So you had a lovely time.
I did. Yeah. You don't seem terribly happy for us. What's that?
No, because I'm bitter and twisted and mean and horrible because I wasn't having a nice time. So this is what happened to me. While you were having such a jolly time with Patrick, having lovely meals and drinks and hanging out with strangers and all that stuff. So I was flying from a tiny airport called Perugia, which is in the middle of kind of Italy, little local airport, Ryanair, usually not bad, into Stansted, which is, anybody who's listening to this who knows, is a living nightmare, which is very east of me. It's an hour and a half to my house, but Ryanair often flies into, because one of the things you have to be careful with Ryanair is they say, oh yeah, we're going into Paris, for instance, but it's actually 5 hours outside Paris. That's why the ticket's so cheap. Anyway, so I get to Perugia Airport and it's a 9 o'clock flight. And I'm coming to London because I've sold my house and I have literally to pack everything up single-handedly.
Yikers.
Pretty much. And so I'm on my own. So we get there and as they jam everybody, it's an old airport hangar. So it's not very big, you know, like army airport thing. And they jam everybody in and then they tell you, oh, it's, well, it ended up 3 hours late. So then the toilets closed, You can't get out through passport control. And there's no conveniences. There's no, the vending machines are outside, so you can't even get some water. Anyway, so it's really miserable. Luckily, in the airport, I bumped into somebody I knew, a film writer who's really nice. And so we kind of shot the breeze and everything. But then I would like to do an entire podcast on etiquette and murder, maybe. So I get on and they're jam-packed, but it's only a two-hour flight, so it's not the end of the world. So we get on the flight and they're very nice, and I'm sitting next to a guy and I'm very, very sensitive. Like a lot of people are today after COVID, I was always like that, of people who make disgusting noises and do things, right? So this guy starts sniffing. So I'm trying to read my book and then I'm, you know, giving him the side eye, which I'm very good at, as all mothers are, glaring at him. But his cold progressed as the 2 hours went. So he started off with a sniff, then he's dripping, and then all over, you know, everything. And then he starts sneezing, and he sneezed for an hour and a half. I mean, literally did not stop, all over the place. I had to actually give him, I had wipes. I didn't have any tissues or anything. So I'm sitting, because I, of course, didn't take a mask. I'm sitting with it all. Because the last thing you want to do, you've got all this stuff planned, all the things you know, I've got a couple of parties while I'm here. I'm seeing friends. Oh, yeah. And the last thing I want is to get a bloody cold, right?
Yeah.
And so.
And you are going to get a cold, I think.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're getting one.
Well, I don't know. It's all your immune system. But, you know, if it had been somebody I knew, if it had been you, I would have hit you over the back of the head and said, could you breathe in another direction, Tommy, please? But I didn't know this guy. So I just glared at him and he didn't care. And then he would sneeze. As he sneezed, he turned onto me every single time. So I'm
God.
Battering this thing. So that was disgusting. And then we got into the airport at 2 a.m. and it was bedlam.
At Stansted?
Oh my God, there were more people there than I've ever seen. People, because you know what? They're also the early flights, there's nowhere to go, and it's so hard to get to this airport. Remember, London has like 7 airports, and it's cheap flights, so all the backpackers are there, and they're sleeping on the floor. So, you know, hundreds of people all over because they're waiting for the early flights. And then I came in here, and the heating's off, the water's off, there's no water to drink. It's like, what? So then I booked a cleaning lady for 7 a.m, so I didn't want to wake her up. She didn't turn up.
What? So is she okay?
I really don't care, Tommy. But no, she still hasn't turned up. She's not coming. So it was just one of those days, and all I have are boxes piled up, you know, ready to start taping and all that, the pens, the this, the that. And I think packing is like one of the hardest things, because it's not a matter of just putting stuff. It's where does that go? Are you giving that to a friend, or are you, you know, keeping that? And I can't keep all this, you know, there's nothing.
No, I mean, part of packing, I've done it so many times, and I'm a well-known packer. I'm very good at it. And I always think, you know, to myself as I'm doing it, the key to a successful unpacking is the packing process. So you don't pack anything that you don't want to keep. The big mistake that most people make is they just throw everything in boxes and think, I'll deal with it on the back end. You don't want to deal with it on the back end.
Yeah.
Purge it, get rid of it, send it to a charity shop, get somebody to pick it up, put it out on the road. One person's trash is another person's treasure.
Yeah.
And it'll be gone in 5 seconds. And you'll be so much more glad that you did that. But my question for you is, how did you end up doing this by yourself? Where is your family?
So my family, who are also staying here, have left me all their rubbish and all their laundry and all that kind of stuff. I hope they're bloody listening. Well, they're having a baby. So you can't say anything. Or else.
Oh, that's, you know, true. Yeah.
First baby in the family. And Hans is actually driving with Billy because he can't take Billy on the flight, right? Mm. So because there's no European flights can take dogs. And I don't think he'd be very good on it anyway. But so he's driving. So he'll arrive next week. And also he's the kind of person who's like, no, you can't take that. Oh, I love that. That's my favorite shirt in the whole world.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you don't need him around.
I don't need him around. So I can get everything out and thrown. We have the dump down the road. Well, you've been here at Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not a very big house. And it's actually been a great little house in London because it's, you know, because my kids are humanitarians and they travel a lot, you know, to third world countries. They came back here because they couldn't afford to get a place in London before. And so they would use this as a base. And they've been also, now they have a house, but they've been renovating that, but they've been staying here while they were renovating. So, and also I have no fridge. Shall I show you this?
Hang on. That house has really served. Look,
there's my fridge.
Oh my God. Where's the fridge?
They took it. So I go to the fridge last night. I'm going, where the bloody hell is the fridge?
Who took it? The kids?
The kids.
Oh. You know what though?
They take the kettle or all the beer glasses they've stolen.
I feel like that's your husband's fault. Hans is, for anybody who doesn't know, he's a little bit mysterious because he never makes visual appearances. But Hans is the most generous person.
Yeah, but you see, he doesn't discuss it. So when I screamed at him this morning and I called and I said, the fridge is gone, he says, oh yeah, Josh took it.
That's what I'm saying. He's incredibly generous.
And I'm like, you couldn't tell me because I go in and I think, oh God, there must be some water. There must be something in the fridge.
It is occasionally, there is a person behind the scenes who suffers from the other person's sense of generosity.
Yeah. And you know, there's a big difference between real estate here and in North America because in Europe, you take everything.
You take your appliances, yes.
Oh, you take
all your major appliances.
Yeah, your stove.
Your cooker, your washer and dryer.
I don't think you'd ever do that in America or Canada, would you?
Absolutely not. No, it's always, you always transition. And the other thing is that I think the standardization sort of system is different in the UK. So everything usually fits where you're taking it. Whereas here, everybody renovates. There's 30,000 different appliance companies. They all make different size things. You know, there's some standardization, but it's not a given that your cooker's going to fit.
Mm. Well, here the problem is that when you move, because of all the oil and gas things, you know, because of global warming, you're not allowed oil anymore. And so if you've got an Arga, which are fabulous and cost a fortune, and so people move into these beautiful old houses, you can't even give them away. And the new Argas are all electric, but they're like the price of a car. So things have changed so that it's like cars. There's certain things you can't drive anymore and all that. So it's all quite, you know, and you sit there when you're packing, and you're just like every corner, you're thinking, I've got to do that, I've got to do that, I've got to do that. Oh, and then I arrived. And you know, I have these two beautiful olive trees outside the
house. Yes, I know
So the driver, who is a friend who picks me up, who's a great guy, who nearly fell asleep at the wheel because it was so late. He goes, where are the olive trees? And that was like the beginning of the meltdown. You know, it's like, okay.
Oh, they weren't there when you got there?
He's given them away. He said, oh, I gave them to my painter. I'm like, you know, they don't ask.
This is the thing. You have such an incredibly generous husband, but he doesn't tell you.
Yeah, exactly. So if I get through this next few weeks without strangling and murdering somebody.
Oh, you're just fit to be tied right now because you've got all this work ahead of you. I always say when packing, when it looks like you're done, you're about half done because it just seems, things start coming off walls and get condensed into boxes and you think, oh, I've made so much progress.
Yeah.
But really, it's kind of like driving through Florida. You hit the border of Florida and then you think, oh, we're in Florida, we're there.
Yeah,
but then to get from there to Miami, it's like a 10-day drive.
Yeah.
So you're definitely in the marathon.
Yeah. And it's, you know, because in Italy, it's also, we're very, very busy because we're getting ready, you know, for your arrival, for all the guests and everything. And so it's like, 1st of April was a holiday, Easter Monday. And then 2nd of April, it was like everybody's arrived. So it's everybody's scrubbing and painting. You know, do you know I paint every room every year at this time of year?
So having been multiple times to the villa, I actually, because I am also a professional in the design world, I can tell.
Yeah.
And I don't think that other people notice. But
Well, I think they do subconsciously. And I hope they notice when they go to, you know, really big, I won't name them, but really big fancy places that they're paying a fortune for. And there's scuff marks on the walls and you know, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't really cost that much to go around with a paintbrush and just check everything and make sure everything looks really fresh and lovely. And I'm really proud of that because the guy was there for 3 days and he said, it's amazing that you do this. And I said, you know, for what it costs and the pleasure it brings people, there's no suitcase marks. There's, you know, so that's all being done.
It's immaculate. Like when you get there, it's immaculate. And as you've said so many times on this podcast and in conversations that we've had on Instagram, the people who come to these retreats are coming for a once in a lifetime experience, and details matter. The fact that you put fresh flowers in vases in every single room, the fact that you paint every year before the season starts and touch-ups throughout, the fact that everyone is turned out and dressed in pressed shirts and ready to receive guests. Like, there's something very, very special about that. And if it wasn't special, it wouldn't work.
We're going to take a quick break. Be right back.
This episode sponsored by BetterHelp.
Hey, Tommy Smythe here. Thank God I have a few minutes to myself without my co-host. I mean, you've been there. You've been overwhelmed before too. I think most people carry around some kind of stress. And here at the Trust Me Pod, it's Debbie, did you put your devices on Do Not Disturb? Debbie, do you have your microphone? And when we have a guest, I just hope to get in one little question. Listen, sometimes it's hard to keep all your feelings all bottled up because you know what happens when you do. It bubbles over, you lose your cool, and maybe you take it out on someone you love. Obviously, I love Debbie. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient and flexible. Whether you're in Toronto or Tuscany, BetterHelp will fit your schedule. Get it off your chest. Visit betterhelp.com/decorator to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/decorator.
A big part of design and decoration for us, and everyone really, is putting your memories on display. When my children went away to camp, it was the first time we'd kind of not been together, and they both wrote me letters, and they were probably 8 and 9 years old, and they are the funniest letters, and I framed them, put them up on the wall, and I see them every day, and sometimes if I feel a bit down, I just read those letters, mostly asking me for more candy, but I think framing a letter is a wonderful thing.
That is why we love the idea of Framebridge. They honestly make it so easy to get anything framed, and they're really, truly affordable.
It's easy to do in person at one of their 20 Framebridge retail stores, and
it's so easy to order online at framebridge.com.
You just upload a photo for them to print. Picking the frame was really easy, but also really hard because there were so many options. I went for walnut, which is a solid walnut frame, but I think next time I'll go for Florence. And they'll mail it to you using their free, secure, prepaid packaging service.
Framebridge has been trusted to frame millions of our memories.
Visit framebridge.com or a local Framebridge store. You can custom frame just about anything. Again, that's framebridge.com. Spring here in Southern Europe is long. You know, in North America, well, in Canada and, you know, the northern states, spring hits really quickly, doesn't it? And boom, everything's open. Here it's this beautiful unfolding of nature, and it's quite remarkable. I mean, all the daffodils, the tulips, the blossom is just, all the almond blossom, which comes out first, it's just, and you're watching it. I mean, you're literally seeing leaves open up. And it's
and
long.
And the poppies. I'm going to see the poppies, this year.
Poppies May. Yeah, so they're May. Now it's really just, you know, all the greenery kind of happening. And it's every day. I mean, I could literally put a camera outside and it's just unfolding in front of me. And so, and the weather's been great. It's like 24, 25. But I, you know, I love spring. And, you know, we did a podcast with Anya, who's got a book out.
Yes, The Garden Fairy.
Yeah. So she does free gardening. So free gardening means how to propagate, you know, how to get, ask a friend or a neighbor, can have a piece of that plant or whatever, and how to grow it for nothing. And she's really good. And her book is fantastic. So she taught me on our podcast how to propagate roses.
Oh, yes.
So I did 50. So they're basically 50 stalks, and I put them into pots. And you put a little bit of pot of propagating white stuff on, and
Is it lime or calcium or something?
It's like something like that, you know.
Bone meal. It's bone meal.
Yeah, and then the roots come out. Well, I hope Anya's listening because 1 out of 50 worked.
Oh my God!
So you have to look at this like how much is my time worth for all the time I spent doing this, like days. And I could have gone and bought a rose bush for like $10, you know.
I mean, gardening takes patience, but it's also so rewarding to do it yourself. And her tips, like I follow her on Instagram, obviously.
She's very good.
the tips that she has that are not just necessarily about propagating, but even just the other day. So when the hellebores come out, that's one of my favorite flowers. And they can be a little bit wilty, like the heads on them can sort of like bow down a little bit. She had this tip where if you slice all the way along the stem up to the flower head on both sides and put them in a vase of water, they stay bolt upright and they're perfect. Wow. And I love this because I've loved hellebores for forever, but I've never really known how to properly put them in a vase and keep them for a long time. So she, all of her tips and her tricks are just so useful. But I think everything that you do takes practice. And certainly with gardening, as you know, because you've been building this garden at the villa for so many years, and also you're British and there's such a great tradition of gardening in Britain. It takes patience.
We haven't even turned our irrigation on in Italy because we haven't needed to, and it's expensive, but it has to go on this week because now it's getting really dry. But England, you see, is perfect. It's got the ideal. It's the number one climate in the world for gardens. Mm. And that's why, you know, the Emerald Isles, you know, Ireland, you fly over Ireland and people gasp from the plane because it's this, it's fluorescent green. And you know, so that's the upside from having a lot of rain. But the funny thing is, you know, we did this live podcast, which was fabulous, right?
I know. Today I'm thinking to myself, where's our audience? Where's the laughter? Where's the clapping?
Wasn't that great? It just makes you so giddy. Fun. It's like being a comedian on the stage. And with me particularly, you're much more restrained than I am, but and polite. But it's like plugging you in. You know, I have no restraint. And you, first of all, I forgot we were being taped. So I got ruder and ruder. And then the story about the carrots, I mean, literally, I really felt like a comedian because people were roaring, weren't they, with laughter.
It's a great story.
Six packages of carrot seeds came through and some very rude pictures. So thank you very much, everybody, for the carrot seeds. And I will plant them. But yeah, that was a really great experience. I'd love to do that again. You know,
the whole reason that we moved out of the live format into the podcast pre-recorded format is so that you don't get canceled.
Yeah.
Because you'll say anything.
Exactly.
You're in your element. I mean, I loved being with you in front of a live audience because you do come alive.
Yeah.
And there's something about the spontaneity of that where there's no safety net that is exciting and exhilarating for sure.
It was lovely. And also it was an audience that's probably not on typical audience. So there were a lot of guys there, a lot of very young people, which was really lovely. And, you know, they're not really sure. And then it was like, well, if you want to ask a question, but we don't answer decorating questions. And they were like, oh, why are we here then? And then we entertained them for an hour. And I think it was a bit more than an hour, wasn't it? And it was great. And, you know, when you're seeing, you know, some great big lump of a guy sitting on the front row looking like, where the hell am I here? And his tears running down his face, you know. And a lot of them came up to me afterwards and said, it's not what I expected, you know. You know, and so I thought that was lovely. So we do have to do another one when I'm back.
Yeah.
When I do the book tour.
I wanted to ask you, speaking of sort of our spring travel conversation today, how are you feeling about our cruise that we're going on together? Are you excited about going to Budapest? I've never been to Budapest.
No, neither have I. And I haven't been to any of the places there. So just so people know, Tommy had done this before and then mentioned to me, why don't you do it? And I said, no, I don't do cruises. And, you know, no, not a chance. And then somehow you put the chains on me and made me do it. Anyway, so we're doing it. We're meeting in Budapest, right?
Yep.
And it's on a river. So it's not like one of those great big ships. And you go down the Danube, yeah?
That's right.
And then we end up in Nuremberg. You know, it's funny because, I mean, we both, you and I, absolutely love travel. And when you travel with somebody, with like a friend or a partner or whoever, there's always one person. So often in your case, like yesterday when you saw the eclipse, you know, Patrick organized it all, right?
He did, yeah.
And if you ask anybody who's very good at this kind of stuff, they'll be quite ruthless about it because they get so fed up of you saying, where are we going next? And what are we doing now? You know, because they've taken on that role of the organizing. Yes. For somebody like me, it is an absolute treat to have somebody
just guide you
through this. And it reminds me a few years ago, I went with a bunch of girlfriends to India and we went to the south of India, which is a little calmer, to say the right word, a little easier on, you know, the northern India, which is quite, you know, rough, quite strong on the eye. And we stayed in, it's in Kerala, which is kind of the V at the bottom. And then we went up the coast to a brand new place. It was a yoga retreat, even though I don't do yoga, so I just wanted to go. But it was a whole bunch of girls doing yoga. But and then we went up the coast on a train. And I was quite excited about this. But my friend Jackie, who you know very well, so my best friend, organizes it all. I was so busy. She said, I'll do it. I'll do it. But every 5 minutes, I'm asking her a question. Well, where are we going now? And what is it? Is it going to be nice? It's going to be nice. So she was getting, and she, you know, she's very patient.
She is very patient.
Very patient. So we arrive at this train station. And that morning, we were in a kind of British style type hotel in this town. As we were leaving, I said, well, how long is the train ride? And she said, well, it's 8 hours. I said, well, I'm not eating the food. I'm not eating that food on the train. She said, well, what are we going to do, Debbie? It's 8 hours. And I said, well, let's ask the hotel to make us a picnic and we can have that on the train.
Very smart move, actually. That's a good travel tip in general because
It wasn't. Well, because we were English, they came, they were very nice. And, you know, they nod their heads and they said, we've made you a very nice picnic, a very nice picnic. And I said, oh, thank you so much. So I opened it up and it's Marmite's white bread sandwiches. So Marmite.
But I mean, British people famously like Marmite.
Yeah. Well, they say you're either Marmite or not. Anyway, so they make this stuff. When we get to the train station, we're coming down these steps towards the tracks and you literally had to stop and breathe. I have never, I mean, Stansted last night was bad. I have never seen so many people in my life, ever. So we're going down, it's an Indian train station, and on the tracks are men, it was very sad, with lime, and they're throwing the lime onto the tracks to kill.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah,
the smelly stuff that comes out the train.
Okay. Okay.
And quite shocking, you know, to see. And they're quite disfigured because the lime eats into their fingers.
Oh my
stuff.
Gosh. Wow.
Anyway, so I'm beginning to panic. And I said, so, Jackie's so fed up with me. So I said, I hope we're in first class. And she stops, slams down the suitcases, and she says, we're in chair class. She said, it's the only thing I could get. It's the only thing there is, or whatever. And I said, what's chair class? She says, oh, you get a bloody chair. Shut up. And it was true, because if you weren't in chair class, you were on either on the roof or in this just open wagon. Anyway, we get on this train and the eight of us look, you know, the middle-aged blonde women looking very like, oh, God, we're pathetic. Anyway, we sit down. And, you know, you're clutching your stuff and I'm not using the toilet. Don't you use the toilet. Don't you? Did you bring water? Oh, my God, don't drink. Make sure, you know, and you're just being very Western. We stop at the first station and a woman gets on, or a bunch of women beautifully dressed in their saris. And there's little tables where you're sitting, and everybody, all the Indians, brought their tables down. And on each table, they put a huge leaf, like a rubber plant leaf.
Oh, beautiful.
And I'm like, no, I don't eat leaves. The train goes off. And the people get off, the people who are putting the leaves down, they get off, it's their stop. Anyway, 20 minutes later, the train stops again. And another bunch of women get on. And this time, they have huge steaming things of rice. Now we're getting a bit hungry, and the Marmite sandwich is looking really awful. So they scoop it on with their hands, and they put a blob on each leaf. So Jackie says, because she took the leaf, I thought you were supposed to eat the leaf, but the leaf is a plate. So a couple of the friends said, oh, we'll have some rice. And the smell of this beautiful jasmine rice and everything. And I'm like, I'm not eating it. I'll have your sandwich. Give me your Marmite sandwich, you know. 10 minutes later, we stop at another station. And now this curry comes on, like a very vegetarian. Mm-hmm. You would love it. It's very, very vegan down there. And then a vegetable curry comes on and some pickle. And of course, I'm just getting hungrier and hungrier. And everybody else is slapping into this stuff. And by the time we got to the 10th station where the next courses were coming, I was like, oh, whatever, I'll eat it. So it was kind of bizarre. So it was a really amazing kind of journey. But then when we got off, we were very good and we packed up all our rubbish really nicely. And when we got off, we had some drivers waiting with a couple of vans for us. And we said, oh, look, what do we do with our rubbish? And he said, oh, you'll give to me. And then he threw it over a wall.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was like, okay, we tried. That's what I love about travel. Sometimes it's nice to kind of go rustic. But when we got to this hotel, was actually fabulous. The beach must have been 300 miles long.
Wow.
White and all forests of palm trees. Because, you know, when you go to the Caribbean, that's not natural to the Caribbean, a palm tree.
No, it's not. No, yeah. They're not indigenous plants.
Yeah.
To that.
It's floated over from Western India or Africa. Anyway, so when we arrived, it was fabulous. I mean, they had never run a restaurant before, so they had no clue. And it's pretty much a dry state, which was also another panic attack. So they had to go off and look for alcohol, which, God, I think it was some kind of rubbing alcohol they gave us. But it was quite nice with a bit of, you know, lime juice in it. That was okay. But the one before that, we stayed and they were little huts, and it should look really nice on their website, little huts on the beach. And I'd gone on ahead and I got there first before everybody. And I thought, I'll choose the best hut. You know,
So I
said to this guy, will you show me all the huts, show me all the huts. And then everybody else arrived and Jackie said, I bet you checked them all out first, didn't you?
She knows you.
She paid a bit more to get one to share with a friend that had two floors, but the top floor was about 8 inches high. So you had to sliver on your side. You couldn't. It was so hot. So
it was just like a loft.
But it is really an experience. It really is. It's marvelous in so many ways. And then we see the beach at this after the train. And Jackie said, oh my God, look at that beach. I've never seen anything so picturesque in my life. So we're walking early in the morning along the beach, and they have round fishing boats there that are bobbing in the water. And it's so beautiful. And, you know, because all the colors in India, you know, the saffron, beautiful color, and the oranges and reds. And so they've got the little sails and stuff. And we're like, oh my God.
Marigolds.
Yeah. And the men, you see, they wear these like long skirts that tie at the front. But then they wear a very ironed, beautifully crisp, very clean shirt. So we're walking along the beach. And I said, God, Jackie, I've never seen anything so beautiful. I said, look, even the locals, look at them all crouching, looking at the view, looking out to the sea. And Jackie turned around and said, they're having a shit. The fishermen, I guess that's where they go. So, you know, it was great.
Very fish out of water. I think you'll be a little less fish out of water in Europe, in the parts of Europe that we're going to be in together than you were in India. I mean, I'm really looking forward to starting in Budapest, but I'm also looking forward to Vienna and Nuremberg and all the little places in between that we're going to be visiting. Are you going to go offshore and do some biking with me and things?
I'm going to do the biking, definitely. But I think what we'll do is, because we're not sure about the Wi-Fi and stuff, so we won't do a podcast while we're on the boat. But as soon as we get back, because you're coming to my place, we'll do a podcast there while it's all fresh in our heads, right?
Yes.
And then we'll give everybody some tips and places to go. And
maybe we'll have Jackie on as well, because she'll be there with us at the villa.
Yeah.
You're going to be so sick of me by the end of that retreat.
Probably.
A week on the Danube followed by a week at the villa.
Yeah. And we're on our own.
You're going to be strangling me.
I do have my own room.
Oh my God, yes, of course. Yes, yes.
How many moves are up? We could do head to toe, and just do it with your kids.
No, they'll give you a beautiful room. And it's really quite a lovely experience. I mean, the food is delicious and, you know, everything is done for you and it's just so pleasurable. And the people are usually really, really nice. So it'll be a nice experience, I promise.
Oh, it'd be really good. But it'd be nice to make some notes and then share them with everybody, wouldn't it? And
you know, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Just from a complete naive kind of point of view. You know, I've traveled since I was, you know, a teenager when I left home and literally was kind of 19 when I went to Japan to work with Jackie. And, you know, when I look back on those days, I'm like, oh, my God, you know, how did I dare do all that? But my mother wasn't a helicopter mother like I am. You know, I think a lot of people are nervous about travel and maybe even more so now.
I think it's changed a lot, too, though. I mean, there are so many of these discount air carriers and the airports are not as efficient as they used to be because they're so much more crowded than they used to be. And, you know, I love the fact that travel is more for everyone now and that it's accessible, but also with that access comes a lot of its own problems. And I mean, what was the airline that you've got me flying from? You've got me coming from.
So that has been voted for the last 10 years. As the worst airline in the world.
Can you put me on? You don't know this, but what the name is?
You know what the name is? Wizz. Who would fly on an airplane called Wizz? W-H-I-Z-Z. Is it Polish?
Listen, so my manager, Chris Brunton, said to me that when he was booking your travel, you said, the one airline I will not fly is Wizz. And then you booked me on Wizz.
Well, it was the only direct flight. And it actually wasn't that cheap in the end.
He and I both were laughing on the phone for a good 10 minutes over that.
Well, even when I was booking it, I was biting my nails going, I can't after what I said. Tommy, just never go on this airline. It's disgusting. And you know when they do, you know, best and the worst of everything. It wins the worst of everything. Worst for losing luggage. Worst for delays. Worst for everything.
Oh my God. I'm so worried.
So we'll have to find out if it's that bad. And maybe it's not. Maybe it'd be great. Because it's only like an hour and a half. So it's not like you're on a 10-hour
flight. It's a short-haul flight and I've got plenty of time to get to the airport and to... It's just, I thought it was so funny that you had said very firmly to Chris, I will not fly on Wizz. That's the only airline I won't fly on. Put me on any discount carrier you like, but not Wizz.
And you know, in the newspaper, they're always doing the worst of everything, you know, and I love it. Worst country to live in, best country to live in. I love those those things because they're all rubbish, you know. But Wizz always comes out on top. Worst airline.
Top of the bottom.
Oh, God. So, yeah, so we'll chat about that. And I'm sure if we come back in one piece.
If I actually make it to the villa, we'll record a podcast. Yeah. I don't know.
Tommy never made it. He's still on Wizz.
I could be still on Wizz by the time the retreat's over.
Oh, my
We're God. Still looking around for my luggage. Well.
And the other thing that might happen when you're there is we might be doing the book reveal. So the cover reveal.
Yes, yes. That's so fun.
So I think that would be really good. It'd be nice if you were there when you see it.
I would love to celebrate that with you.
Yeah.
And Hans will, of course, have champagne around, Prosecco.
Yeah.
And we'll do a little toast.
Well, they're just doing the layout. It's a really nice stage for me because it's when you get all the text and the layouts are coming on. And when I left you in Toronto, I spent a week in the recording studio. Mm-hmm. And
doing the audio version of your book.
Yeah.
I remember when I saw you, you said, I have to go now because I have to stop talking.
Yeah.
Which is very difficult for you.
Yeah, because you have to save your voice. Well, those are our travel plans. And I hope everybody else is either dreaming or booking travel, getting excited and packing up and ready to go. I think it's the most marvelous thing anybody can do, any age, to experience the world.
Tell us where you want to travel on Instagram at TheTrustMePod or leave us a voice note at thetrustmepod.com.
Please rate us, send in a review, and make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I picked something up while I was in Montreal, this great little expression. Bon voyage.
Bon voyage. Bon voyage. Safe travels. I'll see you on Wizz Air.
Oh my God.
I'm Sarah Burke, and I host the Women in Media podcast, where I'm exploring the challenges women face in the media spotlight and celebrating our triumphs. My guests come from radio, TV, news, and sports, and we'll cover topics like leadership, diversity, stereotypes, and more. Most of all, I'm looking to build a community through a space where we can discuss anything. The Women in Media podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at womeninmedia.ca. This podcast is distributed by the Women in Media Podcast Network. Find out more at womeninmedia.network.